Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Text 20. Pasangam Ajaram Pasham.
Pasangam Ajaram Pasham.
Atmana Kavayo Viduhu. Sa eva sadushu krito, moksha dwaram apavritam, vasangam ajaram pasham, atmanat kavayo viduhu. Eva sadhu shukrito,
eva sadhu shukrito,
moksha dwaram apavritam,
moksha dwaram apavritam.
Pasangam,
pasangam,
attachment,
attachment.
Ajaram,
ajaram,
strong,
strong.
Pasham, entanglement,
entanglement.
Atmanaha,
atmanaha,
of the soul,
of the soul.
Kavayaha,
kavayaha,
learned men,
learned men.
Viduhu,
viduhu,
no,
no.
Sa eva,
that same. Sadhushu,
to the devotees,
krittaha,
applied. Moksha dwaram, the door of liberation. Apavritam, opened. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Every learned man knows very well that attachment for the material is the greatest entanglement of the spirit soul. But that same attachment, when applied to the self-realized devotees, opens the door of liberation. Purport. Here it is clearly stated that attachment for one thing is the cause of bondage in conditioned life. And the same attachment, when applied to something else, opens the door of liberation. Attachment for material things is called material consciousness. An attachment for Krishna or his devotee is called Krishna consciousness. Consciousness, therefore, is the platform of attachment. It is clearly stated here that when we simply purify the consciousness from material consciousness to Krishna consciousness, we attain liberation. Despite the statement that one should give up attachment, desirelessness is not possible for a living entity. A living entity, by constitution, has the propensity to be attached to something. We see that if someone has no object of attachment, if he has no children, then he transfers his attachment to cats and dogs. This indicates that the propensity for attachment cannot be stopped. It must be utilized for the best purpose. Our attachment for material things perpetuates our conditional state. But the same attachment, when transferred to the Supreme Person, personality of Godhead or his devotee, is the source of liberation. Here it is recommended that attachment should be transferred to the self-realized devotees, the sadhus. And who is a sadhu? A sadhu is not just an ordinary man with a saffron robe or a long beard. A sadhu is described in Bhagavad Gita as one who unflinchingly engages in devotional service. Even though one is found not to be following the strict rules and regulations of devotional service, if one simply has unflinching faith in Krishna, the Supreme Person, he is understood to be a sadhu. Sadhur eva samantavyaha. A sadhu is a strict follower of devotional service. It is recommended here that if one wants at all to realize Brahman or spiritual perfection, his attachment should be transferred to the sadhu or devotee. Lord Chaitanya also confirms this. Lava matra sadhu sanghe sarva siddhi hoy. Simply by a moment's association with a sadhu, one can attain perfection. Mahatma is a synonym of sadhu. It is said that service to a Mahatma, or elevated devotee of the Lord, is dwaram ahur vimuktehe, the royal road of liberation. Mahatsevam dwaram ahur vimuktes, tamo dwaram yoshitam sangdi sangam. Rendering service to the materialists has the opposite effect. If anyone offers service to a gross materialist or a person engaged only in sense gratification, then by association with such a person, the door to hell is opened. The same principle is confirmed here. Attachment to a devotee is attachment to the service of the Lord, because if one associates with sadhus, the result will be that the sadhu will teach him how to become a devotee. A worshipper and a sincere servitor of the Lord. These are the gifts of a sadhu. If we want to associate with a sadhu, we cannot expect him to give us instructions how to improve our material condition. But he will give us instructions on how to cut the knot of the contamination of material attraction and how to elevate ourselves in devotional service. Jai Shri Radha Kunja Bihari Shri Gornita. That is the result of associating with a sadhu. Kapila Muni first of all instructs us that the path of liberation begins with such association. Prabhupada makes the point in the purport that the living entity has to be attached. It's the essential quality of the soul. You cannot have a living being without attachment. You would have to destroy him. He couldn't be alive and not be attached. The qualities of the self are desires, thoughts, intentions to do things. These are all described in the Shastras. Vedanta Sutra describes in detail the qualities of the self.
We talk about artificial intelligence, that we've programmed computers to think for themselves. Actually, this mythology is taken seriously, that machines can think. Even stories have been written about the machines taking over, you know, because they can think better than us. But actually, machines don't have consciousness. Even if someone could somehow produce a machine that could be aware, that could think, that machine probably wouldn't have any desires. If you produced that machine, then you would be in trouble. Maybe some of us who are married would wish that our spouses didn't have any independent desires. Life would be simpler. But that's the nature of the living being. Krishna designed it like that. Sa aikshita bahushyam vajayeva vajayeya. The Supreme Lord at the beginning of creation looked around him and said, let me become one, become many. I am one. Let me become many. I am bored all by myself. So let me expand, prajayeva. So he wanted to create other beings like himself. Now this is the presentation of the Chandogya Upanishad. We actually can't take it literally. It's a description of the beginning of creation. But that's not the beginning of the living entities. The living entities are eternal. They're co-eternal with God. So it didn't really happen like that. What happened at the beginning of the material universe is that the living entities who were dormant, sleeping inside him, were sent out into creation through the glance of Mahavishnu. But we're trying to get some insight. We're given some insight into why the Lord has living entities in this poetic description. Yes, when Mahavishnu is lying there, he wants to send the living entities out into creation because they want to go out. So it's really not his desire that they're born into the material creation. And it should not be misunderstood by looking just on the surface meaning that that is the beginning of the living entities. They exist eternally. But it is a fact that the Lord created us or expanded us. We exist. We don't understand the process of expansion. It's not a mechanical process. It didn't happen in material time and space. Therefore, we cannot understand it. We cannot measure it. We cannot describe it in our words. The words of our languages, we have 3,000, 5,000 human languages, but every one of them is limited to the framework of material time and space. Our language, our logic, cannot go beyond material time and space. So we can't understand how we expanded from the Lord. We can't describe it. Nor can we describe how we fell down from our spiritual condition and came to this world. If we speculate about it, we'll simply get into trouble. Where and from when and from where we fell down, we'll never know until we go back to where we came from. All we know is that we have fallen. And we can identify that we come from the kingdom of God. So, the living entity, the Lord expands to have a counterpart, to share reciprocation. He creates something like himself, also Sat-Chit-Ananda. The living entity is also spirit-soul. He's the Supreme Spirit. Nityo-nityanam-chetanos-chetananam. Ego bahunam yo vididati kaman. He doesn't like to be the only conscious being. It's no fun. It's boring. To just be all by yourself. Try it. We'll pay you. Sit in a room by yourself, blindfolded, with the lights out. No sensory contact. Try it for 24 hours and we'll pay you a large amount of money. Do it for 3 days without going crazy and we'll pay you a large amount of money. You can't do it. Or you, if you struggle, if you're really intent, you might survive for 3 days without going crazy. But that's it. The living entity demands association, contact. And if he can't have contact with real people, he'll settle for a substitute. Some tingling of his sensation by contact with material objects. The real urge of the soul, because it's the urge of Krishna, to have personal contact, personal reciprocation, rasa, nectar. Nectar is not just, you know, orange juice mixed with sugar. It is the actual juice of life. It is the pleasure of personal reciprocation. We don't know what it is, most of us. We have not tasted it. What we have tasted in our lives, at least to the point that we've begun our real spiritual life, is simply the agitation of the senses of the material body by contact with other material objects. Even in our so-called personal relationships, we have no contact with the spirit soul. We have no consciousness of it, of our own soul or of the soul of the people we love and the people we do business with. We simply contact their bodies and their minds and stimulate our material senses by that contact. It's a poor substitute for the real juice of life. But that's the urge, because the urge is there. If it's not satisfied, it tries to be satisfied in a perverted way. If it cannot be honest, it cannot be properly satisfied. Because the Supreme Lord wanted to share his pleasure, wanted to have the varieties of personal interchange. This bhava, what is prema, what is love? Love is composed of various bhavas, ecstasies. Ecstasies of feeling various emotions, of sharing things. And it is spontaneous and it must be voluntary. Krishna could have created us otherwise, as machines that would simply fulfill his desire, having no desire of our own. He could have programmed us to just do everything to his satisfaction. Instead, he manifested us as autonomous beings with our own thoughts and our own desires. That's what he wanted. Therefore, the living entities have attachment because they have desire. And there's no way a living being can avoid that. Nityo nityanam. So by the Lord's arrangement, by his desire, there are many eternal conscious living beings. And he is simply the original and the supreme among all those living entities. The infinite being, supreme soul, Paramatma, among all the other Atmas. But his position is special. Ego bahunam yo vididati kaman. He is the one of the many who supplies the needs and the desires of all the other conscious living beings. Ego bahunam, one out of many. Even if you have a dollar bill, American currency, the American slogan is there. A pluribus unum, one out of many. Of course, it was a different idea, that it's out of several separate colonies, they formed one country, one nation. But it's the same grammatical construction. Latin is derived from Sanskrit. So, eco bahunam translates into Latin as a pluribus, that's... Mabuhonam is shashti vibhakti, genitive case. But you could also say ablative case. Bahubhyaha. It would be the same idea. So, eko bahubhyaha, one out of many. So, to make it into Latin, instead of bhyaha, you say bus. So, e pluribus. A is a preposition you have to use in Latin to express the ablative case. Out of many? What is it? E pluribus unum. They say unum instead of ecum. Same idea, same words, same almost the same grammar. Krishna is the one supreme being, the one supreme among all the living beings, but we are also living beings, just as he is. And to be alive means to have thoughts, desires, intentions, and to be active. The living entity is kartri and bhoktri, doer and enjoyer. A robot also does. A computer seems to think. But only a living being is actually a doer because he's an enjoyer. He has desires and he does things in order to fulfill his desires. That's attachment. Dhyayato vishayan pumsat sangas teshu bhajayate. Now this is Krishna's description of attachment applied inappropriately to material things. When we lose contact with Krishna, we come into the material condition. And because we have no opportunity anymore, we forfeit it intentionally. Just like a son runs away from home. He had a rich father. He could have lived comfortably the rest of his life without even working. Or his father could have helped him get a good education and career. But he ran away from home. That's his fault. He forfeited the advantage of his father's support. Intentionally, on his own volition. Like that, we have forfeited our connection with Krishna. But the father doesn't forget the son. He's secretly maintaining the son, sending helpers. The son would not accept them, just like Raghunath Das Goswami refused the help and the money sent by his father. But suppose someone less intelligent than Raghunath Das, the father, the runaway son, the father is sending people with money to give him and to watch out for him, you know, people to guard him and watch him. So the father's giving the maintenance, but behind the scenes, because the son would not accept directly. Like that, we don't want anything from Krishna. We don't want anything to do with him. We want to be independent and supreme. And in control, and to be the independent enjoyers. We don't want to share our enjoyment with Krishna. We don't want any of this rasa. We've had enough of it. We want to squeeze some rasa out of this dead body and other people's dead bodies instead. So therefore, Krishna, what can he do? He tries to maintain us. He's doing everything he can to maintain us from behind the scenes, to not let us think that he's not there. And still he's maintaining us constantly. Eko bahunam yovididati kaman. He's supplying the needs not just of his friends, not just of those who acknowledge that they love him, but even to those who ignore him and hate him. He's taking care of everybody. So here we are in the material world. We have forfeited our loving exchange with Krishna. He's still maintaining us, but we're trying to ignore him. So we can't enjoy the rasa anymore. It's our own fault. We threw it away. We threw away our opportunity to enjoy that rasa. So we have to try to enjoy something else. We're trying to squeeze pleasure out of material sense gratification. And therefore we become materially attached. Krishna describes that process in the second chapter of the Gita. Jayato vishayan pumsa sambas teshu upajayate. So a person begins, here I am in the material world. I'm not attached. I'm a spirit soul. I just happen to be in this place, just like a person is in the prison. And he may be claiming, as many of the prisoners are claiming, I'm innocent. It was just some mistake. Or the lawyers were cheating, or the police were cheating and lying. I don't belong here. I'm not a criminal. Many of the criminals will claim that they're innocent. So I'm here in the material world. You know, I don't know why. And I'm not attached. Just like someone gives up his devotional practice and thinks he can just wander around the material world without becoming entangled. He's going to find out otherwise. Here I am. I see some sense objects, interesting things. But it's just like being in an art gallery, looking at the paintings. Just an aesthetic experience. Just something interesting, artistic. Jayato Vishayan, you're just simply contemplating the senses, like some philosopher contemplating the abstractions of reality. But what happens? Jayato Vishayan, you're just pondering, looking at the pictures on the wall, the objects of the material world. Sanghas teshu upajayate. You cannot, because you're a living entity, and you're deprived of your real satisfaction by your own fault. You're looking at these objects. Maya has a large selection of objects, and it's something to catch everyone's interest. No matter what it is, your heart actually has a secret urge for, Maya will find it out. And in the art gallery, there's something that's going to catch your attention. Sanghas teshu upajayate. You're going to become attached to something. For most of us, it's a few things that we all get attached to. So we become materially attached. It starts with simply looking and contemplating, just as if you're, you know, just looking at things without any attachment, but you become attached. So you may start off life in the mode of your material existence in the mode of goodness. It said, Prabhupada did mention it, I don't know what shastra it's originally stated in, that every living entity, when he first comes to the material world, takes birth as Lord Brahma, as creator of his own universe, first. And then he becomes degraded from there. That is the real process of so-called evolution. We evolve downward. We should call it devolution. Going down, not up. Not that we started as amoebas, and now we're human beings. The culmination of creation. And now the force of history will carry us forward, and by technology we will conquer nature and become eternally happy. Forget it. The real process is the opposite direction. We started off as Lord Brahma. We had our own universe. We didn't do such a good job of it, and we've come down now to this condition. And we may have been in worse conditions. We may have been animals, vegetables, demons, demigods, kings, paupers, everything we've been through, up and down, around the Ferris wheel of material existence, many times. This is called samsara, a wheel that is turning around repeatedly. And we've been up and down that wheel many times, most of us. But we start off in a mode of goodness. And it's only by our becoming corrupted that we fall down into the lower modes. So we start off just peacefully looking at what we have in front of us, but then we become attached. We can't help it because our urge for contact, for some rasa, is always there. And when it's not satisfied, we look for a substitute object. And Maya can offer countless alternative substitutes. Material objects, material goals of life, or immediate sense gratification. Person in the mode of goodness will go for some long-term gratification, something important. Person in the mode of ignorance will look for immediate gratification. A pill or a shot in the arm will give them an immediate fix. And the person in the mode of passion will endeavor, but only if a definite profit is in sight. Anyway, we start in the mode of goodness. But attachment is the beginning of the mode of passion. Sanghas teshu pajayate. Sanghat sanjayate kamaha. And what happens? So sangha means I accept it for myself. You know, your parents arrange a marriage, and you agree, okay, I'll marry this woman. That's Sangha. Then you identify, okay, this is my wife. You don't even know the woman, but you're going to get to know her after you're married. So Sangha is just accepting, okay, this object of sense gratification belongs to me. I'll take this money, I'll take this house, I'll take this position, this respect. It's coming to me, I'll just take it. That's Sangha. But what happens from Sangha? Sangat Sanjayate Kamaha. Sangha is just the beginning of the mode of passion. It's just our entrance into it. Sangha develops from the idea that I can accept this, I can take it. It turns into I must have it. I can't give it up. That is Kamaha. I can have it. You're offering me a samosa. Okay, I can take one. But when I have to have 10 samosas every day, 15, 20, or someone, I don't know, samosas are not addictive to everybody. Some addictive item. You accept the first one for free, and then they make you pay for the rest of them. And we become addicted to something. That is kamaha, lust. We translate it as sexual desire, but it's all kinds of desire. When you must have it, that is hardcore motive passion. Kamat krodo bhajayate. Problem is, when you have to have it and it's not available, then you become frustrated and angry. That is the beginning of the mode of ignorance. Now you're caught and you're spiraling down into ignorance because you're addicted to the item, and now circumstantially you're deprived of it, or someone threatens to take it away from you. It always happens like that. Or your senses just don't have the power to enjoy the item. You have the object, but your senses can only enjoy so much of it without becoming satiated or sick. So you become frustrated, and frustration has to lead to anger. Kamat krodo bhajayate. And then you're in the mode of ignorance, and things just go down and down. Krodat bhavati sammoha. From anger comes confusion. Your mind is disturbed by anger. You can't think straight. Your ideas are coming out all wrong. Because I'm angry at that person, I hate him, I want to destroy him. I want to destroy everybody. Because they're blocking my sense gratification. Samoha smiti vibramaha. Then you forget who you are. You're ready to destroy the whole world or anybody who gets in your way. You're forgetting you're a living entity. They're living entities. You have desires. They have desires. Why do you have to consider them your enemy? You've forgotten your real position. Smiti bramshat buddhinasho. And then your intelligence is completely spoiled. You just wear out your mind thinking bad thoughts, anger, frustration, hatred, and your mind just gets blown out. You can't think anything anymore. Buddhinasha. Buddhinasha pranashati. Then you're heading down to a lower birth. Then you can become a low-class human being, an animal, or even a plant. Then you can start as a... again, at the bottom as an amoeba, and follow the Darwinian path. But you have to go through this process to start. Anyway, that's Sangha. That's in the Bhagavad Gita. We should be familiar with that. I'm sorry if I just repeated what everybody knows. Kapiladeva is starting from that point. Pasangam ajaram pasham atmano kavayo vidu. The kavis, wise men, people who have read the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, they know that Sangha is the Pasha. Pasha is a noose. Yamaraj is coming with his Pasha. His Yamadutas have his Pasha. They throw it around your neck and drag you to hell. Drag you to Yamaloka to be judged and sent to hell. Gormohan, don't ever do that, okay? You don't. Gore, don't scare him, okay? Now you sit down. sorry. So anyway, reading the translation of that sentence. Every learned man knows very well that attachment for the material is the greatest entanglement of the spirit soul. Ajaram pasham. It's a noose around our neck, and once you have the noose around your neck, there's no time left for a reprieve. Now, until they let go of the, they pull the rope and then you're hanging, maybe the governor could send a reprieve and they could let go of the noose. But you're hanging there, with this noose around your neck, and you're dead. It's just a matter of a minute or two. So, ajaram pasham, it's a noose around our neck that we have no way of getting free from. What are we going to do? We're living entities. We can't help but be attached. So what hope is there for us? I'll give up one attachment and I'll end up with another one. I'll run away from my family, go to Vrindavan, and I'll find some widow and have a listen relationship with her. I can't help it. What am I supposed to do? So the sadhus, the so-called sadhus, are sitting out there on the Parikram Marga of Govardhan, sitting in Vrindavan. And they just shrug their shoulders. I'm smoking biddies, I'm smoking marijuana, I'm smoking ganja, but I'm a living entity, I have attachments, what can I do? Yenyev aravindaksha vimuktamaninas. The demigods prayed to Krishna in the womb. O Lotus Eyed Lord, there are those who think they're liberated. This is their presumption. But because they have no devotion to you, they haven't developed love for your lotus feet, they're going to fall down back into material attachment. You have to become attached to Krishna to give up attachment to matter. Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe. This is the real method of renunciation. Become detached by attaching everything to Krishna. Most of us cannot approach Krishna directly. We're not Arjuna. Or we're not the mother of Kapila, Devahuti, who have direct access to the Supreme Lord. We can come to the deity, but how will we actually establish a relationship with Krishna, with the deity? Not by ignoring the devotees. We had to become attached first to Krishna's servants. Why? Why does Krishna refuse to let us just go directly to him? Is it just because he's too busy? Like the Prime Minister, you can only approach him, with good luck by going through his secretary? And even then, you may not actually see him? No, not because he's too busy or he's just too important to deal with you. Krishna can deal with everybody and he can fit everybody into his schedule. He can deal with he's dealing with everybody simultaneously. So it's not that he's too busy or too distracted. He's not. He has infinite time and infinite attention. He can deal with everybody. If we all go back to the spiritual world, we'll all be dealing with him simultaneously. So he can handle that. But he doesn't want to interfere with those who have decided on their own to reject him and go to the material world. He will not force us to come back to him. It must be voluntary. Love must be voluntary. We're not robots who have been programmed to do what he wants without our choosing to do it. So therefore, Krishna doesn't want, he makes a rule for himself, not to interfere with the independence of the living entities. Therefore, he's not available for direct access. His devotees do the interfering for him. His devotees do the preaching on his behalf and try to remind the living entities about Krishna, remind the conditioned souls. So therefore, the conditioned souls are advised to go to Krishna's devotees, become attached to them, And by that attachment, they will reintroduce them to Krishna. So, eva sadushu krito moksha dwaram apavritam. When our attachment, which can't be given up, can't be avoided, is redirected to the devotees of Krishna, then the door of liberation is open for us. The impossible is accomplished. We can't give up attachment, but we can transform it into its original form, attachment to Krishna, by becoming attached to his devotees. So, that attachment to devotees, first of all, the nature of the devotees, and how that attachment purifies us will be described further by Lord Kapiladeva in the next verses. Prabhupada discussed in the purport the identity of who the sadhus really are. This verse only says sadhu. Prabhupada translates it as devotees of the Supreme Lord. This is justified, and that will be explained in the next verses, how the sadhus are really the devotees of Krishna, of Narayana. Jai Shivada Kunja Bihari Shigurnita. Okay, are there any questions or comments? Yes, please. Krishna is satisfied by himself, so why does he need anybody else, is basically the question. Of course, I explained before that Krishna wasn't really by himself. The living entities always were there. Okay? That description is just poetic. It's describing the beginning of creation. The living entities are already there. They're just sleeping inside Mahavishnu, the conditioned souls. And in the spiritual world, Krishna has many devotees, and they're always with him. So there's never a time when Krishna's actually alone, first of all. That we understand. But you're asking, why can't he be alone? Why does he need anybody else if he's self-satisfied? Technically, he doesn't. But he feels he would like something more than that. Just to contemplate his own glories doesn't fully satisfy him. He's not an egomaniac who can be satisfied just staring in the mirror. Somebody may be like that. Actually, nobody's like that. What's the use of being such a rich, great man if nobody's going to appreciate you? You know, it's no fun. What are you going to do with all your money? You know, how many expensive, you know, things can you eat? How many cars can you buy? So unless you have somebody to share your assets with, it's not much fun. So Atmarama, yes. That means he doesn't need anybody's help. He doesn't need any. He doesn't need any money from anybody. He doesn't need anybody to do anything for him. He can do everything by himself. He's perfectly competent to do whatever he wants to do. But one of the things he wants to do is to enjoy a reciprocation with somebody else. So his desires are all automatically fulfilled. That's what it means, Atmarama. Whatever you want, it comes automatically without any great endeavor. You just want it, and it's there. Like you have a magic bottle, you know, a genie in the bottle. You know, you rub the bottle, the genie comes out. My master, what can I give you? And you say what you want, and he produces it. So Krishna, like that, he just says what he wants, and it's there. But what he wants, he's Atmarama. His desires are automatically fulfilled. He wants to share his pleasure with somebody else. So therefore, the expression of his being self-satisfied is that he expands into many other living beings. That's how he fulfills his own desire, by not being all by himself. He wants to be like that. But he doesn't need anybody's help. He doesn't need anything from us. He just would like to play with us. That's all. He can do everything himself. He can take care of himself completely. but he wants to share some reciprocation. It's not really contradictory. Okay? Anything else? I'm sorry, Prabhu, you had. Here's a microphone.
Next question is about what is the effect of association and what is the body? But what is the process of being attached to the body? Is it the life of the Vrindavan?
Is it what?
Is it the fourth stroke of Vrindavan that
These are Dadati Pratigrinati Guyamakyati Prichchati Bhunte Bhojayate Chaiva. These are the six kinds of loving exchanges amongst devotees. These are things you do to express loving attachment. But they assume that you have loving attachment. So, still the question is, how do you become attached? Hare Krishna. You should have appreciation for the devotees. You should understand that the devotees are the best kinds of people. These are the most intelligent, the purest people in the universe are the devotees of Krishna. Otherwise, you might think that the Deshbhaktas, the devotees of your country, are the best people. And you may want to join some political party to find the best people. Or you think the people who can make the most money are the best people, so you want to go find them and associate with them. So you have to, first of all, with your intelligence, decide that the devotees are the most desirable people to associate with. You have to understand that they're the people who have got what I want. That's the beginning of attachment, to appreciate. If we can generate this appreciation in people, that's the beginning of their devotional attachment. Oh, these Hare Krishnas aren't bad people. They're not all this and that. They're decent people. They're smart. They have it together. They're considerate. They're cultured. So creating that appreciation in people is the beginning of their attachment. Then you just have to... You appreciate someone from a distance. Come and meet them. Talk to them. Have some sort of dealing with them. How do we deal with complete strangers? We have this temple. Come off the street, take darshan, have some prasadam, meet the devotees, maybe you'll become attracted. It happens naturally, but the beginning is to have some appreciation. If I think these people are useless, they're off the wall, I don't want anything to do with them, then you'll never form any attachment. Or maybe you will. Krishna has his ways of tricking. Some devotees began hating some devotees before they became devotees hated the devotees. Went out of their way to harass them or avoid them. It was actually, they were devotees in their past life and they were trying to avoid surrendering again. And Krishna, after a short time of this nonsense, Krishna got them. They became attracted, helplessly. Every living entity is actually Krishna's servant. So every living entity has the natural propensity to be attracted to Krishna and to Krishna's devotees. But all the garbage covering our heart keeps us from feeling that natural attachment. So that garbage has to be cleaned off. Give people prasadam. Give people Prabhupada's books. Give people the association of devotees. And that garbage will be cleaned off and they'll become gradually attracted. Okay? This is the purpose of preaching. It's not that we simply go around with big hammers and beat people over the head with the truth. We have the truth, you're ignorant, here, boom. No, it's not just that. We're trying to attract souls, make people want to come to Krishna by awakening the spark of attraction. That takes some considerate dealing with people, consideration and careful dealing, not just smashing. Okay. Yes. Is what a product of kama? Kama krodo bhajayate. Well, a product in the sense, the definition of a cause and effect is that the cause has to exist before the effect, and the effect and the production of the effect is not explained from some other reason. For example, the potter is one of the causes of the pots. You need the man who makes the pots for pots to be produced. But that man also has a donkey. So the potter is always there before the pots. We may not understand the mysterious process of how he produces pots, but we understand that pots require the potter. But I may misunderstand that his donkey also has to be there. The donkey, he always has his donkey there when he's working. So I may think the donkey is also a necessary cause of the pot. But the purpose of the donkey is something else. He's there to carry the dirty laundry of the potter. Yeah, that's his purpose, the donkey's purpose. So his being there is explained by some other reason, so he's not a cause. So we don't have to understand how the cause becomes the product. We just have to, identify that it has to be there before the product, and its being there is not explained for some other reason. So when you have kama, material attachment, desire, it will turn into anger. Because it's the cause of anger because it exists present before the anger, and its being there is not for some other reason. It's a manifestation of material desire, and anger is also a further manifestation of material desire. They're both there for the same reason. So it is the cause in that sense, in the technical sense. How it becomes, how it acts as the cause, how that desire turns into anger is a complicated thing. We may not be able to understand it completely, the whole mechanism. But we can identify, yes, it is the cause. By the standard logical definition of cause and effect. Okay, one thing leads to the other. How exactly it does it, that may be beyond our understanding. Okay, you can study psychology, and that will give you some insight into how even mundane psychologists can explain something to you about how desire leads to anger. You can go to the library and find psychology textbooks. We'll say something about that. Yes, Prabhu? Well, the fall down is inevitable, even beginning from the first stage of contemplation. You look at an object, unless it's an object that you really just don't have any interest in. Not that it will happen with every object. The thing is that Maya has so many objects, she's got one for you. And when you hit that one, then you're stuck. Or she's got a few of them that you can't help but being stuck to. Like flies dash into the fire, to the lamp. They can't help it. It's their instinct. So when Maya pushes the right button, then we're stuck. And she knows how to do it. She has so many. She'll play around with us and then find the right button. The only way to avoid it is to become attached to Krishna and his spiritual energy and his devotees. It's the only way to become safe. Otherwise, if we even contemplate, we're in immediate danger of falling down. We may not have fallen down yet, but there's no hope for us unless we take shelter of Krishna's internal energy. Okay, so the answer is yes. That pondering will inevitably lead to attachment. Unless we become attached to Krishna through his devotees. That's what Kapila Devi is saying in this verse.
Now we are in the association of devotees. Are there some practical ways in which we can increase our attachment to devotees, to our Shiksha Guru, to our Diksha Guru? How can we increase the attachment?
Not just Diksha and Shiksha Guru, we should become attached to all the devotees. The Guru, we should, as the direct representative of God, we should love him and serve him unconditionally, give our whole life. The other devotees we should always consider our friends. We should develop friendly relationships with the devotees. So we can try to serve our guru more, but we should also try to serve, I mean, that's not unimportant, but also important, we should cultivate our proper relationships with all Vaishnavas and try to increase the community of Vaishnavas. We should have, not that there are too many Vaishnavas, I can't handle all of them. We should want more Vaishnavas. We should have that desire. Not just my guru wants it, but we should want it. More Vaishnavas. Everybody should be Vaishnavas. And you have to study. How do you cultivate, increase your attachment to Vaishnavas? That was described by the loving reciprocations. By the dati pati grinati, give something, do some service. It doesn't just mean giving monetary gifts, buying things, but doing something, some service for devotees. Giving doesn't just mean spending money and buying something. It means showing a little appreciation, saying something nice. Just appreciating is giving something very valuable. And accepting. Although we don't like to be praised, we should accept the praise of devotees. Because that's loving reciprocation. And then so on. Reveal our hearts. And ask other devotees to reveal their hearts. And then share prasadam. These are the important reciprocations. We should cultivate those. And any obstacles to that cultivation we should get rid of. Bad feelings among devotees should be dissolved. There are described, I think, in the Vishnu Dharmotra Purana, 6 aparads against Vaishnavas. One of them is, I think the Sanskrit is darshane naharshanam. When you see a Vaishnava, you're not happy to see him. That's an aparad. You haven't said anything. But if you think, oh no, that guy. Just think it. It's an aparad. You should try to force your mind to be happy when you see a Vaishnava, any Vaishnava. If you're dissatisfied to see someone, then you better do something to counteract that. Go out of your way to show that you're happy, even if you didn't feel happy. If you have bad feelings against any Vaishnava, what should you do? If you think someone is your opponent and he's a Vaishnava, you'd better counteract that by going out of your way to do some service for that Vaishnava, the one that you don't like. Because that's an obstacle to the cultivation of loving dealings. Okay? Do you have something to say?
Yes.
Okay, please say it.
That Durvada has a book.
Okay. I guess you don't. Okay. Okay, girl, don't fool around during the class. Anything else? Okay, we'll stop here. Thank you, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.